For more information, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
The Wreck of the Hesperus. I've recited so many of these poems to my grandkids, and finally I'm going to get my moment of fame. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea, and the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, her bosom white as the hawthorn buds that ope in the month of May.
Okay, my name is Anne Jeffrey, and even though I am 82 years old, this one poem that I learned studying German in high school countless decades ago has stayed in my memory, and I don't know why. It is by Goethe, and it is in German. Ein Weilchen auf die Wiese stand, gebuckt in Sieg und unbekannt, es war ein herziges Weilchen. Doch kam eine junge Schäferin mit leichtem Schritt und munterem Sinn, daher, daher. I don't remember anymore, but the point is a wonderful one, and it is about how carelessly we might step on a violet that is growing beneath our shoe. We don't notice that we've killed the violet, but the violet still leaves a scent, even though it has been crushed.
Welcome to Sonic Lit, CJLO 1690. This is a literary audio radio show. I'm Jason Camelot, and I'm here with...
Catherine McLeod.
And today we have a very special show. Are we still in Poetry Month?
We are. We are fully immersed in Poetry Month. And as I said last week, when you tune into Sonic Lit, it is always Poetry Month.
Well said, Catherine. But today we have something really... I would say sort of rootsy, you know. We have a bunch of people who will just be reciting poems that for one reason or another they memorized at some point in their lives and have been carrying that poem around with them, and then will just sort of recite whatever it is that they have managed to memorize, you know, whatever poems they're carrying with them.
Wow, I'm really excited to listen to this. And as you're listening with us, you'll also hear a bit about how we recorded these poems. But we're going to start with listening to some of the poems themselves.
Yeah. So we heard a couple already, but we're just going to continue with this stream of a series of people reciting poems that they at some point in their lives remember. And memorized and now still remember.
Hi, my name is Carlos Apitela, and there's this piece I've carried with me a long time by Sofia de Mello Breiner Andresen. She's a Portuguese poet, no longer living. And there's this controversial piece that some, for a long time, people thought it was like an apocryphal piece. But it turns out that it was really by her, and it's about traveling and letting go of things to travel. So let's see if I remember it. It's called Hora, Hour. I'll say it in Portuguese. I'll say, even though it's in European Portuguese, I'll say in Brazilian Portuguese, but that doesn't matter. Okay, de Sofia de Mello Breiner Andresen, Hora. Sinto que hoje novamente embarco para as grandes aventuras. Pairam no ar palavras obscuras e o meu desejo canta. Por isso, marco nos meus sentidos a imagem desta hora. Sonoro e profundo, aquele mundo que eu sonhara e perdera, espera o peso dos meus gestos e moram mil gestos nos meus dedos. Fatigadas dos círculos funestos das mentiras alheias, finalmente solitárias, as minhas mãos estão cheias de expectativas e segredos, como os negros arvoredos que baloiçam na noite murmurando. Ao longe, por mim, ouço chamando a voz das coisas que eu sei amar. E de novo, caminho, para o mar. It is kind of like about, well, I mentioned what it's about, but it kind of rhymes in a weird way, which makes it interesting. And there's like, it's very, the lines vary in length, and it's very unexpected. It's about someone letting go of things and walking towards the sea. That's it.
Hi, my name is Alexandre Descaires, and this is It Was a Good Day by Ice Cube. Just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kinda odd. No barking from the dog, no smog, and mama cooked the breakfast with no hog. Boom.
Hi, this is Nivet Dharmaraj. The piece that I'm about to recite is called Pandurangale. It's a small poem slash song slash hymn that we used to sing in my school assembly growing up. And because we would do that twice a week for all 12 years that I was there, it kind of etched its way into my brain. And this is how it goes.
Ritu vasanti la kokila kuhu kuhu bole Pandurangale, Pandurangale, Antariksha Ujjwala Jala, Surya Bimba Ale Ale, Pandurangale, Pandurangale, Pandurangale Ale, Pandurangale.
Thank you.
Okay, so my name is Maureen Maravich. This poem, I believe, is called Nothing Gold Can Stay. I cannot remember who wrote it. I've known it since high school. I didn't have to memorize it for high school, though. It was something that someone actually submitted to our high school yearbook that they didn't write, and they published it. And then we later found out it was actually a famous poem. But I really like the poem still. I think it is a really interesting message, so I still remember it. So, as I recall, if I get this right, hopefully, nature's first green is gold, its hardest you to hold, its early leaf a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf sank down to leaf, so Eden sank to grief, so dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay. That's it. I think because maybe as a teenager, the idea that you're golden in this first life and nothing can stay that way is very stuck with me at that time. That's it.
So my name is Shakaya Williams. I'm going to recite a poem that my mom taught me as a kid growing up. It's called Miss Lucy Had a Steamboat. I'll recite it now. So, Miss Lucy had a steamboat. The steamboat had a bell. Ding, ding, Miss Lucy. I forgot the rest. Miss Lucy had a steamboat. The steamboat had a bell. Ding, ding. Miss Lucy went to heaven. The steamboat went to hello, operator. Please give me number 9. Miss Lucy is in the courtyard kissing boys behind the refrigerator. There was a piece of glass. Miss Lucy sat upon it. It went straight up her. Ask me no more questions. Please tell me no more lies. The boys are in the bathroom zipping up. Their flies are in the city. The bees are in the park. Miss Lucy and her boyfriend are kissing in the D-A-R-K, 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 dark, dark, dark. Wow. That's
awesome. My name is Michael Clark. My stage name is Be Weird. The title of the poem is Fall Out of Love. I learned this poem by heart to move on, to move past. Here we go. You told me that you fell out of love. What sort of fall was it? Was it a fall from grace or from a burning tower, or was it cold and colorful like autumn? When I fell out of love, I forfeited my power. They say it's not the fall that does you in, but when you hit rock bottom.
So this is a poem by W.H. Auden. I think it is untitled, either that or I forget the title. And I just think it's a really beautiful poem, and it sort of got into my head, I think, practically without my doing anything to get into my head. This lunar beauty has no history, is complete and early. If beauty ever bear any feature, it has a lover and is another. But this, like a dream, keeps other time, and daytime is the loss of this. For time is inches, and the heart's changes, where ghost has haunted, lost and wanted. But this was never a ghost's endeavor, nor finished this was ghost at ease. And till this pass, love shall not near the sweetness here, nor sorrow take his endless look.
My name is Sid Lazarus. Funny enough, I only remember like a random batch of dialogue from Julius Caesar because I had to play a character in high school when I was in a theater show. Is that considered poetry? We'll find out. That you have wronged me doth appear in this. You've condemned and noted Lucius Pella for something bribes from the Spartans. That's all I remember.
Hello, my name is Paisley Conrad. Today I'm going to be reciting a few lines from Stevie Smith's My Hat. I recited this in a poetry reading competition when I was 12 years old, and I did not win, I did not place, but I did get my picture in the paper for it. So here goes. Mother said if I wore this hat, I should be certain to get off with the right sort of chap. Well, look where I am now, on a desert island with, so far as I can see, no one at all on hand. I know what has happened, though I suppose Mother wouldn't see. This hat, being so strong, has completely run away with me.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I'm going to be reciting Chaucer from the Old English because my 11th grade English teacher made me memorize it, and it's the only poem I have memorized. One that April, with the shorter soda, the vein had pierced into the rota, and bothered every vein in switch liqueur, of which endangered is the floor, when Zephyrus Aga with a seat a breatha, in spirit hath and every spirit heath, the tender root and the tall and the I don't know the next one. And the younger son have pierced into the road something, something in the Bernard Bon. Thank you.
Oh, my name is Lauren Mosley. The title of the poem is I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud by William Wordsworth. From Vancouver, I learned the poem because my grandmother gave me a copy of it as a birthday gift one year. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high over vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way. They stretched a never-ending line along the margins of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in a sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the waves with glee. A poet could not be but gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye that is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils.
My name is Jeffrey Robert Little. I am going to recite First Fig by Edna St. Vincent Millay. It was a poem that I encountered in a third year poetry class taught by Professor Linda Monk at the University of Toronto. And she was in her last year of teaching, and she was tired, she was fed up, she was not interested in giving take-home assignments, and so we learned poetry in class. She drilled it into us, and it was an amazing experience. And I have remembered reams of poetry or fragments of poetry because of that project, that class, and this is one of them. My candle burns at both ends, it will not last the night, but ah, my foes, and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light.
You're listening to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show, and we are listening to poetry. Poetry that people have memorized, or poems that people have memorized, poetry that they carry with them in their minds and in their hearts. These were recordings that were made live, and you're hearing them here on Sonic Lit. But there's actually a lot to say about how these recordings were made and just the experience of gathering these poems. The person behind the gathering of these poems is here, Jason Kamla, the co-host of this show. We've actually recorded some of these together too. So I've watched it happen. But I'm going to ask him a few questions about how he came to record these poems and what interested him in this project.
Yeah. So these, I guess we would call them field recordings, poetry field recordings. And yeah. Essentially, a few years ago, I had the idea, because we've been digitizing many poetry readings that had been recorded on reel-to-reel tape back in the 1960s, it occurred to me that it might be a lot of fun to bring a reel-to-reel tape recorder into different venues and invite people to recite any poems that they knew by heart. This is part of a larger project. I'm aiming to gather 24 hours straight of people reciting poems that they've memorized, and then install it as a sound installation piece that would just run on a loop for weeks on end. But essentially, what we've done is we whenever there's an opportunity, for example, many of these recordings come from the ALEC Book Fair, which is a book fair for English language publishers in Quebec. And they sell books, but they also have readings, and a lot of authors are present. And it seemed to me, oh, this would be a good venue where people might know some poems by heart, because there are a lot of book lovers who come and buy books, and then there are a lot of writers who are there promoting their books. And I basically got a table at the ALEC Book Fair, and we set up a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and we invited people to recite any poems that they remembered. And so, you know, it sounds a little noisy in these recordings. That's just because there's a whole book fair happening around us as we're making these recordings. I have a few portable reel-to-reels, so I just sort of take the one that's working best at the moment and set it up on the table. I have also a lot of old tapes that I've inherited from different people, often with music and things on them. So you may hear little snippets of, you know, accordion music or other kinds of music, classical music, in between the recitations. And that's simply because, you know, that little piece of what was recorded previously on that tape was left there. So you can really get a sense of, these are just sort of basic field recordings with the noise of the environment. And we always ask each person to introduce themselves. So you heard them state their names. You heard them tell a little bit of a story, one either before or after they recite the piece, about why they learned it, where they learned it, so that the context, the thing that led them to memorize a poem, which is very interesting. And often the stories are as interesting as the poems that they're reciting, and then to do their best to recite the lines. And I think they're interesting. We'll listen to a bunch more of these, but they're interesting to think about in terms of, you know, why do people memorize poems? What are some of the ways in which people have put poems to memory or learned them by heart? You used the word heart before, so that is sort of the way it's sort of ingrained in you. And yeah, and we'll hear in some of the recordings to come, people talk a little bit about the significance of having learned these poems for them in their lives, you know. So very often, the primary reason, that, and we heard this a few times, is, you know, this teacher or that teacher made me learn this poem, right? Sometimes people are grateful for that, like Jeffrey Little, who we heard right at the end there, was saying this was a great thing, and it's resulted in me having all these little snippets of poetry in my head. You know, other people was just sort of drilled into them. But then we're going to hear other scenarios of memorization, some personal, some familial, that inform why people memorize poems. And I'm very interested in that. You know, why do people learn poems by heart? And what does it do for you to actually have some lines by heart that you carry around with you? I'll just mention one other thing, and there's a lot more to say about this, but very often when you invite someone, so when we have someone come by our table and we have a microphone and the reel-to-reel tape recorder, and we say, would you like to record a poem that you know by heart? Often they'll say, whoa, no, I don't know anything. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, they'll circle back and say, oh, wait, I remembered, you know. Yeah. So very often these things are buried deep back in the back of the brains, and then sort of just getting them to think about if they do have any lines of poetry by heart, sort of gets them to recall them. And then pretty soon they're quite enthusiastic about trying to perform the lines that they have learned at some point in their life.
Especially too, often people will say, well, I don't know if I'll remember it perfectly, but then when we say, well, just remember it as best you can, often they do remember it perfectly anyway. It's really amazing.
Yeah, and we say, even if it's one line, I'm really interested in what people remember and how much. And then, and we heard a few people falter, along the way, or then start over, and we heard, I guess, also varying degrees of fluency in the performance of the piece,
Well, we have more that we're going to listen to. There's more recordings coming up next. But also, as you're listening today to our show, try to think for yourself. Is there some poetry in your heart that you're holding on to? And I bet that by the end of the show, you'll be able to recall a few lines. So do think about what you're holding on to while listening.
This April, Concordia's Design and Computation Art students are presenting Nodes.na, their annual year-end exhibition. From April 15th to 17th, discover a wide range of future-facing work, from sustainable materials and furniture design to games and immersive environments. The show highlights the intersection of ideas, disciplines, and identities emerging from one of Concordia's most innovative programs, and it offers a glimpse into what's next in design. The exhibition will be open to explore at the Société des Arts Technologiques from April 15th to the 17th and culminate in an unforgettable final event on April 17th from 6 to 9 p.m. We've got some great stuff in store for our guests. It's 18 plus only, free entry for all, and we'll see you there.
Now computing. The most futuristic sound waves in all of cyberspace. CJLO. 1690. AM.
The electrical signal is being transduced through the wire being sent here, and it's creating magnetic power patterns on the tape because it's iron oxide on the tape.
My name is Tristano Perfetto, and I will be reciting In Flanders Fields. I learned this poem when I was in elementary school. In Flanders Fields, the poppies grow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place within the sky. The larks still bravely sing and fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. I think that's all I got.
Hi, my name is Liana Cusmano. I'm going to be reciting a few lines of poetry from memory from my childhood, from this poem called Scarparello. It's a short Italian poem about a shoemaker and how his clients don't listen to him when he tells them how to pay attention to their shoes and take care of them. So it goes, Scarparello furbacchione, fa le scarpe di cartone, la signora non ci bada, perde il tacco per la strada. And my grandmother taught it to me when we would go to the park when I was a kid, between the ages of 3 and 5.
My name is Nathan Evans. The poem that I read was written by, I believe, Lord Tennyson. And the only line that really stuck out to me was, the cat licked its tongue into the corners of the evening. I remember this from grade 9, when we learned, we did a poetry unit in school. And I remember the imagery in this poem always stuck with me.
Right. My name is Kaya Smith Blackburn. The title of the poem is Death Be Not Proud by John Donne. I believe it's the 17th century, I'm not sure. I learned it in a Renaissance literature class in University, Toronto. So death be not proud. For those whom thinks thou mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. For those whom thinks thou dost overthrow, die not, poor death, nor yet canst thou kill me. That's it.
Hi, my name's Casper Noberski. The title of the poem I will be doing is Death Be Not Proud by John Doe. I learned it from Shane Coison, the poet in Canada, spoken word artist. And I'll just start with that. Death, be not proud, though some call thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. Though death dost hurt me, something, something, something.
Okay, my name is Margaret Doyle. The title of my poem is Seeds, and I learned it in Wales when I was 6 years old. And this is how it goes. Little brown brother, oh little brown brother, are you awake in the dark? Here we lie cozily, close to each other. Hark to the sound of the lark. Little brown brother, oh little brown brother, what kind of flower will you be? I'll be a poppy all tall like my mother. Oh, do be a poppy like me. What? You're a sunflower? How I shall miss you when you grow golden and high. But I shall send all the bees up to kiss you, little brown brother. Goodbye.
My name is David Patterson, and this is a poem about Sam McGee. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men from Oil for Gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that could make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was the night on the lodge near Lake LaBarge, where they cremated Sam McGee.
Hello, my name is Kaya Tombeck, and I will recite a little Finnish tongue twister. Mun mummoni muni mammani ja mun mammani muni mut. And that means, my grandma had my mum and my mum had me.
I'm Rhonda Mullins, and this is a poem by Emily Dickinson, and I picked it because I translated a novel about Emily Dickinson recently. In this life that lasts just 1 hour, how much, how little is within our power? Or something like that.
My name is Clara Duplessis. This is a poem I learned in grade 3. It is in Afrikaans, and I have no idea what the title is. Ek pluk 'n roosie geel. Ek ruik daaraan, dan word ek skeel. My neus swel op. Ek raak skoon boos. Daar was 'n by in daardie roos.
My name is Hugh Thomas. This is a poem by W.H. Auden. I learned it a long time ago when, you know, I could just read poems and they would just sort of imprint themselves in my memory, which is not true anymore. And I'm not sure what the title is. This lunar beauty has no history, is complete and early. If beauty ever bear any feature, it has a lover and is another. This, like a dream, keeps other time, and daytime is the loss of this, for time is inches and the heart's changes where ghost has haunted, lost and wanted. But this was never a ghost's endeavor, nor finished this was ghost at ease. And till this pass, love shall not near the sweetness here, nor sorrow take his endless look.
Well, which one was your favorite, Catherine?
Well, possibly the one that Claire Duplessis recited in Afrikaans, or runner-up would be The Cremation of Sam McGee.
Oh, yeah. What a deep voice
yes.
that reader had, reciter had.
Yes.
I like that we had Death Be Not Proud, one after the other. One of the reciters identified the author as John Donne and the other as John Doe. But we should say on air that it is indeed John Donne.
Yes. And I like that they wouldn't have known that the other person had just recited that poem.
No, that's right. Yeah. And I should say that these clips have been sort of compiled, you know, for the purpose of the show. So they were recorded, some of them at different events, different occasions. We'll hear recordings that were done even in a classroom. Actually, Clara Duplessis is also a professor at Concordia, and I visited her classroom, and some of her students wanted to record poems they knew by heart there. But a lot of these are from, like I was saying, book fairs. And so we'll be hearing, as we go, some pretty prominent Canadian writers. And we'll get to hear what they know or what they learned when they were kids. You know?
Yeah, I was excited about that, hearing Rhonda Mullins recite something, a prominent translator here in Montreal. And also, who else did we hear? Leanne Cusmano. Really interesting as someone who does do spoken word and sort of storytelling, to hear what is held by memory for someone who's always working with poetry out loud. Hearing some of the voices in the background and kind of getting a sense of these being recorded at events, it's always really interesting to sort of imagine yourself in a room full of writers and then imagine, well, what are they holding on to in their memories poems that they've learned, often quite young. It was interesting how that came up, really recurring, that one person commenting on how he said, you know, I don't know if I could memorize something today, but I could do it when I was young. Somehow that, like, humans are best perhaps at memorizing things when we're younger, but you know, we probably could do it today, but maybe we're just not, the invitation to memorize something and recite it might not come about as often as maybe when we were in school and we were younger. But I like to think we could still memorize a poem if recite it if we had to.
Yeah, I think we learn song lyrics fairly.
That's true.
Easily.
Yeah, when we're younger, like this, the songs we hear when we're younger really stay with us. Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing I think that is related to learning poems when we're young in one context or another is how many of these recordings are done in the mother tongue or the right. maternal, you know, language of the speaker. Mm-hmm. So we have, we already heard some, like, from Portuguese and Italian, mm-hmm. Afrikaans, Clara's poem. But we'll continue to hear poems in a great variety of languages. And I think that's also just characteristic of a book fair in Canada, where so many people have come or have right. heritage from different places.
Just thinking of the recording process, that when, you know, we were talking a little bit before about, like, asking people to record and having this, like, reel-to-reel player, it also is interesting thinking of, you know, the interest to record something on the device itself. I think that can also be part of the, you know, the sort of... getting people warmed up or interested in giving us, say, their poem, because I don't know if it would have the same effect if we just, like, walked up to them with a phone and was like, oh, can I record this on my iPhone? It's sort of not the same as recording it on this reel-to-reel device, where you can then think about, like, how is your voice being recorded onto this tape, and you can see it all happening as an analog piece of technology, and even just then thinking about, like, how often do you get to, you know, record on a machine like that?
Yeah, we really do use it to attract people, actually. Yeah. It's kind of a curiosity that makes people come to our table when we have one set up. And we almost always rewind a little bit and play
That's
back
right.
the recording that they just made. So, and it's loud. One of the Sony reel-to-reels, portable reel-to-reels I have is very loud. And so when we play it back, it's sort of the loudest thing in the room. And so that makes people, like, you know, look at us and realize we're there. And then they walk over and then they want to do it themselves. And even the rewinding, I sort of do it in the way that allows it to touch the tape head. So you hear, like, you know, you hear that noise and it's very loud. And so it sort of attracts attention. So definitely the media technology is an important part of the entire exercise. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just hear some more.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Here we go.
My name is Jeremy Klughaupt. This poem is The Red Wheelbarrow by William Carlos Williams. So much depends upon the red wheelbarrow glistening with rainwater beside the white chickens. I remember this poem, I don't know why, but I've always remembered it. That's what I got.
My name is Zoe Shaw. I have a couple of lines from John Keats' Bright Star. Bright star, would I were steadfast as thou art, not in lone splendor, hung aloft the night, and watching with eternal lids apart, like nature's patient, sleepless eremite.
Hi, hello, my name is Michael Shaw, and I'm going to be reciting The Quatrain of Seven Steps. It's a very old poem from the Warring Kingdoms era, or the Three Kingdoms era in Chinese history. I first saw it a long time ago in, like, a textbook, and I just thought it was interesting because it's one brother saying to his brother why he should not die, essentially. And so this is my own translation of it. They boil the stalks to burn the beans. The beans by angry fate convene. We too from self-same root did grow. Why should we now come to blows?
the event.
Okay. Spring is here. Spring is here, spring is here. Birds are fluttering far and near. Soon they will be building their tiny nests where their small babies will rest. Spring is here, and summer's warmth is coming near. That's a poem I wrote when I was about 8.
Hi, my name is Adriana Radulovic. I'm gonna recite a few lines from a poem called Luceafărul. It's a Romanian poem written by Mihai Eminescu. And I had to learn it in school long time ago, very long time ago. So this is how it goes. A fost odată ca-n povești, a fost ca niciodată, din rude mari împărătești o prea frumoasă fată.
One Arch by Elizabeth Bishop, read by B. Umaya Perlin. I don't know how I know this poem. The art of losing isn't hard to master. So many things are filled with the intent to be lost that their loss itself is really no disaster. Lose something every day, except the fluster of lost door keys, the hour badly spent. The art of losing isn't hard to master. Then practice losing farther, losing faster, places and names and where it was you meant to travel. The art of losing isn't hard to master. I lost my mother's watch, and look, my last or next to last of three loved houses went, and it was really no disaster. I lost two cities, lovely ones, and vaster, some realms I owned, two rivers, a continent, I missed them, but it wasn't a disaster. Even losing you, the joking voice, a gesture that I loved, I shan't have lied. The art of losing isn't hard to master, though it may look like, write it, like disaster.
Hi, mon nom est Catherine Cormier-Larose. Je récite un extrait de L'avion est un réflexe court. Les pylônes électriques sont faits pour nous pendre. Les barrages pour nous noyer. Tu ramasses le plus de respiration dans des bouteilles, les gardes pour plus tard. Tu ne sauras jamais t'en servir, te prendre la bouche sur un tuyau d'exhaust.
My name is Barbat Dejami, and... Actually, the reason that I'm going to recite this poetry is that I fell in love with literature with Emily Dickinson, and that made me major in English literature. So the poem goes like this. Nobody knows this little rose. It might a pilgrim be. Did I not take it from the ways and lift it up to thee? Only a bee will miss it. Only a bird will wander. Only a breeze will sigh. Ah, little rose, how easy for such as thee to die.
Right, my name is Penny Rankin, and this is a poem that I wrote at about the same time that this machine was first used in the world, and I called it The Shores. The shores are covered with a wet of waves, and I run alone, leaving memories of time melting in the pebbles of my footsteps. I dance and turn with the gift of eternity, moving as a shadow in the evening's twilight. No one caring, no one wanting, this freedom I have found and have to share. That's it.
My name is Ashley Fortier. I'm going to read from Agave Girl by Ashley Obscura. And I didn't actually learn it by heart. I just picked it up off the table next to me. Wiping my tears on faux fur, I watch the sunrise 93 million miles away. I have this vague intention that I never want to arrive or leave anything ever again. There is color inside of color, so with chapped lips, I pluck my first white hair. Visions in darkness, something so fast it blurs.
Hi, my name is Ashley Obscura, and this poem is called Museum of Symmetry, and I think I know it by heart, but I would know it by heart because I wrote it. A girl went out to find a place, the home of everything, where all is bound within itself, and all the cosmos sing. A wish fell on the web of life, another on the dream. It made the cosmos laugh a lot to see and to be seen. A web appeared, dazzling threads, the space within its space, the center through its edge away, the void revealed its face.
Hello, Janin Chan is my name. The title of this poem, I think, I'm not sure, but it's called Nothing Surpasses the Stillness, The Mystery of Stillness. I learned this poem by reading a book. It's by E.E. Cummings, and it was a collection of an anthology. All right. Nothing surpasses the mystery of stillness.
My name is Chloe, and I'm reading from two poems on postcards that are found in my bedroom from a museum in Paris, I believe, is where I got them. The first one is, Un jour j'irai vivre en théorie, car en théorie tout se passe bien. And the second one is, Tout seul on est rien, mais ensemble on est trop.
Hi, my name is Tracy Waddleton. I'm going to read a little bit from a Ron Hines song that's very famous called St. John's Waltz. Everybody in Newfoundland knows this song, so it's no surprise that I can do this. Are you guys ready? The harbor lights are gleaming, and the evening is still and dark, and the seagulls are all dreaming seagull dreams on Amherst Rock. The mist is slowly drifting as the storefront lights grow dim. The moon is gently lifting as the last ship's coming in.
Benny James Arkless. The title of this poem is called Somatic. Today passes through, and nothing in the affirmative settles to exalt me in the right ways is a task whose criteria get lost. Talking it through doesn't help, but apparently this is how feelings gone unfelt. Gateway grief, when I get hit, I don't fall. I hover, how panic suspends the body, how the breath adheres itself to any promise of motion, how the eye dilates in peripheral, lights expanse, searching for the yes in anything.
Standing.
Hello? Okay, well, I don't know what to say. Oh my god. Yeah.
You claim with flimsy parchment that proclaims ownership, citizenship, a severely superficialness, the taking and overtaking, the dismissing and denying, buried under layers, the ice is petrifying.
Ian Ferrier. The title of the poem is Letters from the Ice Age. I learned it by heart because I performed it about 35 times. Cities buried, streets forgotten, warehouses ransacked and abandoned for the south. We love, we breathe, light footprints of our passing through the snow. What would we say and how say it? Who would we talk to and how could they answer?
There's always enough when you share, and your heart feels lighter than air. Just apply this hypothesis. I promise you'll see just how miraculous sharing can be. There's always enough when you share.
My name's Kyla Ian. The title of the poem is The Old Astronomer by Sarah Williams. I learned the poem when a favorite artist of mine quoted it with a piece that she drew. It's just a couple of lines. I have loved the stars too fondly to be fearful of the night.
This is Andrei Farkas. I'm going to recite part of the Hungarian national poem. I learned it in grade one in Hungary, and I heard it during the 1956 revolution. Tapra magyar hív a haza. Most az idő, most vagy soha. Rabok leszünk, vagy szabadok. Ez a kérdés, válaszatok. Roughly translated?
Yeah, that'd be great.
On your feet, Hungarians, or arise, Hungarians. Now's the time, now or never. Free or slaves we will be. This is the time for you and me. Something
like that.
Quantum Leap by Dandy Gagnon. I do not hear the earth anymore. Am I listening to the rush of my veins? My veins to your wires, my desires to the cloud drowned by the white noise of HBO. Transiting from Polaroids to selfies, I twirled in the eternal flux feeding my Lucy memory, like a dervish looking for rapture, only to find my longing choking under my addiction. Under the magnifying lens of the digital, the past is too hostile, paved with contrition. If I am to survive this third revolution, I need to go up one more level. I need a quantum mind to hold successes and failures simultaneously, where you love me knowing that you did not, where everything hangs in the balance and I can rewrite all the chapters. In the absence of absence, filled with false realities, I need a quantum mind expanding to the beat of the universe, to be free of the binary, roaming in the myriad possibilities, unanchored by time or space, gladly coupling with the machines, a quantum mind.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
This is Nick from Mauno, and you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
Welcome back to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. Today, we're listening to poetry by memory, poems that people carry with them in their minds and in their hearts, and poems that we've recorded on reel-to-reel tape. So, Jason, what do you make of those last poems that we heard?
Well, there was quite a range, right, of poems. We heard Elizabeth Bishop, and we heard nursery rhymes. But what I really remarked in listening to that last segment was the differences in how people approach performing a poem. Mm-hmm. And I think you remarked this when we were listening, that there's a sense of, in a sense, summoning an audience, like, here we go, you know, or are you ready, you know, that kind of thing. But also how, for some people, it's really just about somehow getting the words out from memory and being able to articulate them, whereas others seem to have in their mind a kind of performative rhythm that they would like to, to make happen as they're reciting the lines.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating too, knowing that, say, you've been talking with the person about, okay, we're going to record this poem, and sort of explaining like how we're going to use the machine and like signing the waiver and all those things, and then suddenly they're like, and now one art by Elizabeth Bishop, and they just like launch into this like performative way of speaking that's totally different from how they've been talking to you up until that point. But it's like people have that in themselves that they can suddenly just like turn on.
And there were a few, again, prominent spoken word performers or poets in there. Yeah. We heard Andre Farkas right at the end reciting a national poem, Hungarian national poem that he learned in grade one. We heard Ian Ferrier, passed away just last year, an important spoken word artist in the city, reciting a piece that he'd performed many, many times, as he said. And then a lot of people just reciting things that they had picked up along the way somewhere.
Yeah. Also, just like lots of rhyme, too. It was interesting how, rhyme, there's a reason why poems rhyme, because it really does stick in your memory. Even, too, I really like that some people would say, like, oh, I can only remember this one line, but it really stays with me. And it made me think about, like, what is it when we like sort of turn a line over and over again in our minds and hold on to it? Like what kind of pleasure or even kind of care or consolation is that giving us to just like hold on to a line of poetry or inspiration at times to like recall it in certain moments. So it was interesting just thinking of like even those lines or the person that commented on the postcard that they look across at in their room, and then that those lines of poetry have stayed with them. So, yeah.
I think that's a really good point. And also a lot of regular rhythm, right? So
yeah,
basically, you know, the kinds of poems that have very accentuated mnemonic functions, like mm-hmm. through rhyme and rhythm, that just allow, almost force them to stick in your head after mm-hmm. you've heard them a few times.
Yeah. Well, it's very apt to be listening back to these recordings. It is Poetry Month, or always Poetry Month, and we have more. We, as Jason was saying, he's there's hours and hours of these recordings that we've been compiling, so we have a lot to choose from. We do have some more that we are going to play, and they're also they've been recorded at ALEC Book Fairs here in Montreal, so we'll probably recognize a few names or a few voices. And again, just as you're listening to today's show, think about the lines of poetry that stay with you and that you hold on to in your mind and in your heart.
Hi, my name is Derek Webster, and I'll be reciting Philip Larkin's poem, This Be the Verse. I learned it many, many years ago. I was impressed by the way it rhymed, and I studied the rhythmic patterns in it. And I also love the way it moves between eloquent English and rough street English, I suppose. That's one reason I like it. Okay, so here it goes. Philip Larkin, This Be the Verse. They fuck you up, your mom and dad. They may not mean to, but they do. They fill you with the thoughts they had and add some extra just for you. But they were fucked up in their turn by fools in old-style hats and coats who half the time were sappy sweet and half at one another's throats. Man hands on misery to man. It deepens like a coastal shelf. Get out as quick as you can and don't have any kids yourself.
Yes. Breakfast Song by Elizabeth Bishop, read by B. Umaya Perlin. My love, my saving grace, your eyes are awfully blue. I kiss your funny face, your coffee-flavored mouth. Last night I slept with you. Today I love you so I cannot bear to go, as soon I must, I know, to bed with ugly death, to sleep there without you in that cold, filthy place, without the easy breath, the night-long, limb-long warmth I've grown accustomed to. Nobody wants to die. Tell me it is a lie. But no, I know it's true. It's just the common case. There's nothing one can do. My love, my saving grace, your eyes are awfully blue, early and instant blue.
My name's Layla Marshi, and I'm going to recite a poem by Emily Bronto that I used to walk and step to as I went to and from home at lunch, because I had no friends to eat with. So I would walk a half an hour home for lunch, eat for 5 minutes, and walk back. Okay, do I start? He comes with western winds, with evening's wandering airs, with that clear dusk of heaven that brings the thickest stars. Winds take a pensive tone, and stars a tender fire, and visions rise and change, which kill me with desire. Desire for nothing known in my mature years, when joy grew mad with awe at counting future tears, when if my spirit sky grew full with flashes warm, I knew not whence they came, from sun or thunderstorm. But first a hush of peace, a soundless calm descends, mute music soothes my breast. The struggle of distress and fierce impatience ends. Mute music soothes my breast, unuttered harmony that I could never dream till earth was lost to me. Then dawns the invisible. It's the unseen, its truth reveals. My outward sense is gone, my inward essence feels. Its wings are almost free, its home, its harbor bound. Yet I would, measuring the gulf, it stoops and dares the final bound. Oh, dreadful is the check, intense the agony, when the ear begins to hear and the eye begins to see, when the pulse begins to throb, the brain to think again, the soul to feel the flesh to feel the chain. Yet I would lose no sting, would wish no torture less, the more the anguish racks, the earlier it will bless, when robed in fires of hell or bright with heavenly shine, if the vision heralds death. If the right with heavenly shine,
If it but herald death, the vision is divine.
My name is Gretchen McCulloch, and this is a poem that I memorized as a very young teenager who was interested in linguistics, and I liked the linguistic playfulness of it. So here we go. I lately lost a preposition. It hid, I thought, beneath my chair. And angrily I cried, perdition, up from out of in under there. Correctness is my vade mecum, and dangling phrases I abhor. And yet I wondered, what should he come up from out of in under there for?
Aaron Morey, it's some lines from Macbeth. And I learned it by heart in grade 7 because I had to. I have lived long enough. My way of life has fallen into sear, the yellow leaf, and that which should accompany old age as honor, love, obedience, and troops of friends. I shall not look to have, but in their stead, curses, not loud but deep, breath, which the poor heart would fain deny and dare not. Satan. That's the servant's name. I memorized that line because there was a line that just had one word in it.
Giuliana Pendenza è un detto dalla mia infanzia. Sono italiana. Dimmi chi, con chi vai e ti dirò chi sei.
Steve Luxton, I have no idea where I heard this piece, but it's a great folk piece. How many miles to Babylon? 70 miles. Can I get there by candlelight? Yes, and back again. This one has haunted me all my life.
My name is Mark Abley. These are the first few lines of William Wordsworth's poem, The Daffodils, which I will say twice. I learned this in elementary school as part of a class recitation in the Lethbridge Music Festival, and the teacher, it was a terrible teacher, unfortunately, instead of I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high or veils and hills, she had us say it, I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high or veils and hills. And I've never gotten over that experience since.
Which I think is what you said at the end of yours, but it was...
German language course given by a very nice man who was a child.